Well, I believe that he would do it all again, but I thank God that he didn't have to. I'm glad that the Son of God was crucified once for all. And that sacrifice that he made is good for the whole world if they would accept it. Well, I call your attention tonight to 1 Samuel 25. I gave us a little primer last week, and tonight we're going to pick up beginning in verse 4, and we'll get through verse 17 tonight. It's part one of the title sermon, Married to a Fool. Married to a Fool. I was trying to think this week about people that were married that I thought, well, one of them is just not very bright. And I'm sure that you probably have some people like that. I've got people in my family like that. And I've had men, not in my family, but I've had men that are acquaintances of mine, and they would begin to talk about their wives, and they would say things like this: well, my old lady this, and my old lady that. And a year or so ago, one of them in my presence was saying that, and I said, now, wait a minute. I said, why do you say that? Why do you call your wife your old lady? Well, she's my old lady. And I said, no, you married her. You're supposed to respect her. And if you don't respect her, then you've got a problem. And he goes, well, she's not everything she ought to be. And I looked at him in the eyes and I said, and you made the choice to marry her. And he goes, yeah. I said, so what does that say about your judgment? If she's not everything that she should be, how wise were you in making the choice? Well, last week I introduced you to a man named Nabal. What did we learn about Nabal? Well, we learned, first of all, that he was wealthy. He was a man that had a lot of wealth. In the first part of chapter 25, he had 3,000 sheep. I can't help but think about one night. It was a Sunday night after Thanksgiving, and we had participated in some type of live nativity scene, and a fellow that was at the Yellow River Game Ranch, he grew up in one of my early youth groups, he brought some animals over here, and I remember I had a sheep that tried to get away. And I had to grab that sheep and pick him up and throw him up in the trailer. But I'm telling you, if it hadn't been a slick bottom on the, the concrete that he was trying to run on, it was kind of damp. I believe that sheep would have been gone to this day. And all I'm thinking is they got 3,000 of those things and it's sheep shearing time. Well, not only did he have 3,000 sheep, but he had many possessions. He had 1,000 goats. And so he was a wealthy guy. But not only was he wealthy, the scriptures tell us that this man Nabal, he was a man that was wicked. The old English word that we have in our chapter here is the word churlish. He was a man that was intensely selfish. He was a man that it was all about himself. He was a wicked man. We're going to see that tonight in the way that he responds to a request. He had a shot in life. He didn't always, have the wealth that he had at this time. Perhaps he had some of it, but he began to expand on it. But he came from a good family line. He came from the line of Caleb. If you would look back at verse 2, there was a man in Maon. His possessions were in Carmel. That was an area that had been deeded over to Caleb when the Israelites finally got into the promised land. And his lineage was still there. And his offspring included Nabal. And so he had a good lineage, but just like some people, they revere the name that they have. He didn't really seem to care about his great-great-great-great-grandfather Caleb. And so he had a good lineage that he ruined. But then maybe the thing that is so confusing to me is the wife that he landed. How did this guy ever come up with this woman? All I'm thinking is it had to be an arranged marriage. There's no way this lady had a choice. And so tonight we're going to pick up in verse number 4. And I want you to notice, first of all, that it's a time of sharing. Now remember, it was the shearing of the sheep in Carmel. Verse 4, it says, "And David heard in the wilderness that Nabal did shear his sheep." So in other words, the word got back. David heard, just like David heard that Saul was coming. Saul heard where David was. The spies are still out. People are still sharing information. And so David knows that, okay, enough time has passed, and they are beginning to get the wool from 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. They know that it's a time just like when the wheat harvest comes in or the barley harvest comes in. They know that there's going to be some sales that go on. They know that there's going to be purchasers that are buying this commodity. And now there's going to be money that's flush. There's going to be big partying that's going on, because during the time of the shearing, there was big parties that went on. If you remember the story of Absalom, he had a sister named Tamar. He had a half-brother named Ammon. And Ammon was evidently a wicked boy, and he was lusting after his half-sister Tamar, which was Absalom's full sister. And he feigned a sickness. One of his wicked friends told him, said, why don't you just make like you're sick and ask your father to let Tamar take care of you. So he made like he was sick, and when she came in to basically be his nurse, he rapes her. When Absalom hears about it, he begins to plot. And at the time when the shearing was going on, it was a festive time. He said, "Hey, come on, Ammon, let's go. Let's have a party." And he was biding his time. And Ammon steps out from the gates of the city and he's killed. And the story is that David says, "Ammon, Ammon, he died as a fool." And so you've got the time of the sheep shearing, which is a festive time. And it's been a long time coming, because let's face it, you know, you don't shear sheep that often. And when it happens, it's a time of rejoicing. And so he did shear his sheep. Well, there's a request that is made beginning in verse number 5. And David gets some of his men, 10 young men. Now remember, he has 600 men. He has 600 men along with their families, and he's to take care of them. And so he takes 10 men, and David said unto the young men, "Get you up to Carmel." And remember, this is not Mount Carmel where Elijah was. This is a different Carmel. "And go to Nabal and greet him in my name." I want you to notice that a request is being made. I want you to notice that the request is a respectful request. And may I say that that's a good example for us, the way that David basically approaches this man. He shows respect. He does not show arrogance. He wants the man to know that he recognizes that, you know, that this man has goods and possessions, but he also wants the man to understand that he has been basically giving him some protection. But just the way that he asks, he doesn't come across as being abrasive. There's just an ease about the way that he tells these boys. He said, now when you go and you talk to him, he said, first of all, you greet him by saying, David says hello. And then you're going to say to him that liveth in prosperity. In other words, he is wealthy. He's not struggling. He's got it pretty easy. He can do whatever he wants to do from a financial standpoint. I mean, God evidently has blessed this man's flocks. Maybe he blessed him because of old Caleb, because Caleb was a godly man. And so you'll say unto him that lives in prosperity. And then he says peace three times. The word peace is the word shalom. And he says, shalom be both to thee. Shalom be to thine house. And shalom be unto all that thou hast. This is an Eastern greeting. In other words, I want there to be peace and God's blessing on you personally. I want there to be peace and God's blessing on your family. And I even want there to be peace and God's blessing on everything that you possess. Well, that's a very nice thing for people to say. When I go into a home, I'm not there to try to offend people. My purpose when I go is to try to be kind. And I'll say, thank you so much for, you know, allowing me to come by and visit with you folks this evening. You've got a beautiful home. Oh, is that your family in those pictures? Well, you've got a lovely family. And I try to be as kind as I possibly can be. Why? Because I want them to know that I'm at their place and I'm doing my best to respect them. When you go to somebody's house that you have just been acquainted with, you don't just walk over and open the refrigerator and say, what you got in here to eat? You don't do that. No, you don't even sit down until you're told, please sit down. I mean, if they're not telling you to sit down, that may be a hint they're wanting you to get out. And so David, he makes this request in a very respectful way. And so these men, they say, this is from David. Peace be to you. Peace be to your family. Peace be to everything that you've got. In other words, they're not there to stir up trouble. Not only that, it says that, and now I have heard that thou hast shearers. In other words, you've brought some people in that are professional wool gatherers. They know how to shear the sheep without nicking the skin. They know how to do it in a way that is most efficient. And so it's a time of sharing. The men have a good testimony that are there, which when the response that you're going to see in a moment, it just simply shows you the character of Nabal. But these young men that are there, they have been part of a group of men that have been basically protecting Nabal's property, his sheep, and his shepherds. I'll show that to you in just a moment. When you think about that protection, I want you to remember that there were marauders, especially during the harvest times. Do you remember the story of the Philistines? And when they came to the people and the city of Keilah, what did David do? David defeated the Philistines because they were taking the people, those farmers, they were taking their grain. And David went and protected them. It's the same thing that was happening in Judges during the time of Gideon. They had the enemies of God's people, and they would wait until the farmers had done the work, and then they would come in and they would take the grain after it had been winnowed. Well, you have these sheep, you have these goats, and now they're being sheared for the wool and for the goat hair. And so it was the time of the shears. Now thy shepherds were with us. In other words, they're rehearsing what they have done for him. In other words, we were living out in the wilderness. Your sheep and your shepherds were out there with us. And we didn't hurt them. We didn't do anything to bother them. Neither was there naught missing unto them. In other words, there wasn't a single sheep. There wasn't a single goat. There wasn't a single coat. There wasn't a single loaf of bread that was missing from your boys. They were just out there with us, but we didn't do anything to take anything that they had. And he said, we protected them and we didn't take anything from them all the while they were in Carmel. Well, they're telling the truth. The reason that I say that is if you look at verse 15, it says, but the men were very good unto us. In other words, there's a servant that was one of the shepherds that was out there, and now he's rehearsing this to Abigail. But he said, they were good to us. We weren't hurt. We didn't miss anything. As long as we were conversant with them, when we were in the fields, in other words, we just talked to them. They were good guys. They protected us. Nobody bothered us. We didn't have to worry about these marauders coming and taking anything. And so we see that the men have a good testimony. Isn't it a wonderful thing when people have good testimonies in their business dealings? I think it is. I think that if you owe somebody something, you ought to pay it. I believe that if somebody owes you something, they ought to pay you. But some people have the idea that if they owe me, that's good. They need to pay me. But if I owe somebody, that's just their bad luck. There's a parable that Jesus told about a man that was forgiven. I mean, literally like thousands and thousands of dollars. And he begged forgiveness. And the man that he owed it to, he gave him mercy. But that same man went out and he found someone that owed him just a few dollars. And he took that man and began to beat him and was going to cast him into prison because he owed him a few dollars when he had been forgiven of thousands and thousands of dollars. And there's some people like Nabal that have that kind of attitude. It's all about them. And so even though it was a time of sharing, and it should have been a glorious time, everybody should have been happy as they could be. David and his men had offered protection. He had not let anything happen to any of the men. Nothing happened to the livestock. And now he just simply wants to be paid a little bit for the protection. Well, not only did he say that, but when they were talking to him, they said, "We come in a good day." In other words, we come when things are flush at the bank. We come when there's going to be some barbecuing going on. We come at a good day. We didn't come 3 weeks ago, 3 months ago, when things were still in flux and the shearing season had not yet arrived. We didn't come then. We come in a good day. We came in a right day. And so he said, I pray thee, whatsoever cometh to thine hand unto thy servants and to thy son David. In other words, whenever he's talking, he's like, you don't have to give us the best. Just give us something to provide for our families. Just give us a little bit. Oh, but not only do we see the time of sharing, the sharing that should have been, the generosity that should have been, but the second thing that I want you to see is a temper that flares. I think all of us have known people that had a temper. Well, look with me at verse 10. Nabal answered David's servants, and he says, who is David? Notice the lack of respect that he gives to David. Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There may be many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. You know what he said right there? He's a run. David, who is that? That son of Jesse? He's a runaway slave. He's a servant of Saul. And what is he doing? He's running from Saul. He doesn't take into consideration what Saul's been trying to do to David. Oh, evidently he knows all about it. We'll see that as we develop the narrative tonight. But there is a disrespect that's going on. And then he says, shall I then take my bread, my water, my flesh or my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it unto men whom I know not whence they be? I don't even know who they are, who they're from. Can I say first of all that Nabal is an ungrateful man? He's ungrateful. Think of the losses that he would have incurred had David and his men not been there to protect his shepherds and his flocks. He may not have had a shearing season. He's ungrateful. Dr. Bob Sr. used to say this, when gratitude dies on the altar of a man's heart, that man's well nigh hopeless. If there's something that God's people ought to have in their hearts, it ought to be a grateful heart. There ought to be something inside of us that is so thankful for what people do for us. I believe that's just a good testimony. When people do you a kindness, you ought to be thankful for that kindness and not expect it. Now, all of us have met people where it's all a one-way street. I've heard that said about certain preachers where they would say, well, you know, it's all coming his way and it never goes any the other way. Can I tell you that's not a good testimony? We ought to be grateful when people do things for us. I don't do it as often as I used to and as often as I should. But I used to write notes constantly. I even had stationery that it said, from the desk of Tom Foskey. And I would mail little notes out just thanking people for the various things that they've done. Now I usually just shoot a text or send a little quick email. But back before all of those things, I would write little notes. And I need to be better at it than I have been in the last few years. But I am so grateful when God's people do things at this church. You know, with no reason other than the fact that they love God, they just come by and say, you know, I saw this and I think I just want to try to help with this. Right over here in this prayer garden is a little bench. And on that bench is the names Mose and Ruth Tanner. The Tanners were members of this church until they died. They were never really outspoken in church. They were never really people to be seen as far as, you know, being up on the platform. They didn't want any part of that. But almost the weekly basis, you would see them out in front of the church by the marquee, and they would be out there and they would be digging in the dirt, planting flowers or putting mulch out. And they just wanted to just serve the Lord. Can I tell you that I was grateful that they were willing to do that? Can I tell you that Brother Don and the rest of the staff were grateful that they were willing to do that? The maintenance people were grateful that they were willing to do that. And they were such a testimony in this church. And they were just grateful that they were Christians. They were grateful to be members of this church. And there ought to be gratitude in our hearts, just like the Tanners had. There ought to be gratitude in our hearts always for testimony's sake. Because it speaks to our character when we don't have a gratefulness. Not only was he ungrateful, but he also wasn't generous when he should have been. This man was making money hand over fist. But yet, he was not willing to share with somebody that had given his people and his possessions protection. Miserly people are not fun to be around because they're selfish. It's one of those things that's almost like the me monster, right? It's just me, 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 me. And so he was an ungenerous man. Not only that, he even denied the law of Moses. Now, he's supposed to be, you know, a Hebrew that loves Moses and loves Moses' law. But the Bible tells us in Deuteronomy chapter 15, it says that when the poor, your brother, and the poor there means poor by circumstances in life, not poor because of irresponsible decisions and laziness. If a person just don't want to eat and they think everybody ought to take care of them, they've got another thing coming biblically. The Apostle Paul said that if a man won't work, he shouldn't eat. And so we ought to be willing to do whatever it takes. Somebody said, well, would you be willing to do anything? Well, if it meant my family having something, yeah, I'd do it. I'd get a job in the morning at McDonald's and one in the afternoon at Burger King. I'd do whatever I had to do. Work is a good thing, but some people have not learned to love it. And so this man, he denied the law of Moses, and it said, if you've got a poor brother, and basically it's not his fault, it's just circumstances of life, that if you don't help him, then basically the curse of God is going to be upon you. And so he's denied the law of Moses. Not only that, he's a liar. If you look back at a verse that we just read just a moment ago, he said, who is David? Let me tell you something. Everybody in Israel knows who David is. They know the guy that killed Goliath. Can I tell you, if David had not killed Goliath, that the Philistines would own Nabal's property? The Philistines would have been the lords of the land. Nabal wouldn't have had any sheep. Nabal would not have had any goats. He would not have had any shepherds. He might not have even had a wife. They might have just killed him just for the fun of it. But everybody knows who David is. Do you remember the song? Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. That's the thing that set Saul's trying to kill him in motion, was the jealousy there. Everybody knows David. Everybody knows Jesse. Whenever David began to come onto the scene, he began to get notoriety. Whose boy is he? He's the youngest boy of Jesse. You know, the one that's got those seven other boys? And Samuel said, no, 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 no. You got another one? Well, I got a kid out keeping the sheep. Go get him. Oh, everybody knows who Jesse's boy is. And yet he's saying, who is David? Who's the son of Jesse? He's just a runaway slave. And so we see that he's a liar. He knows exactly who he is. But do you know people that are churlish? People that are wicked? They sometimes seek to justify their decisions. They don't just say, no, you can't have any food. No, you can't have a few sheep to butcher and let your men and their families eat. No, they've got to begin to disparage those that have asked. And David is being disparaged. The man that is going to be the next king is being disrespected. He's being respected by a man that thinks he's somebody when he's a nobody. And next week, we're going to see how that God really deals with this fool. And so we see his temper flare. And so what does David's young men do? Verse 12, they turned their way and they went again. They're going to David. And they told him all those sayings. So not only do we see a time of sharing and a temper that flares, but I want you to see another temper that flares. Look with me at verse 13. And David said unto his men, gird ye on every man his sword. And they girded on every man his sword. And David also girded on his sword. And there went up after David about 400 men, and 200 abode by the stuff. So David only took 400 men, but they were armed men. He left 200 of them just to make sure that nobody ran off with their things. And where is he headed? He's headed to Nabal's house. In other words, we've offered him protection. We have given him security. We've respected him in the way that we have asked. We've asked for him to give us not the best, but just something. And now he wants to talk about who are we? I don't even know where these guys come from. And so, David's ticked. Now, may I say this, that even God's people can make mistakes. When David's temper flares, I believe that he begins to make some mistakes. He begins to think, well, I'm going to kill all of them. You say, well, where do you get that from? David didn't say that. He said, I want you to look with me at what one of the servants said. Look with me at verse 16. We'd already read verse 15, how they were good to us, didn't hurt us. In verse 16, they were a wall or protection unto us both night and day, all while we were with them keeping the sheep. And verse 17, the servant says this to Abigail. Know and consider what thou wilt do. For evil is determined against our master. What is that evil? Well, I think that it's not really hard to read between the lines. David's strapped on a sword. He's got 400 men that's got swords on. And they're headed to Nabal's house. And this man knows that David is probably going to kill them all. Well, God is going to intervene with this. And it's sad when one man's actions hurt everybody. There have been times when men have made decisions for their family and it's hurt the rest of the family. There's times when men are so prideful and they're so arrogant that they make decisions and say, I don't care what you say, I don't care what y'all think, I'm going to do this. And when they do it, it turns into disaster. And Nabal is disrespecting these men. He's disrespecting David, Who is he? And David's fixing to say, I'll show you who I am. And so we see David, and he is mad. He's mad as he can be. We've got to be careful with those tempers. We've got to be careful. I don't think that everybody ought to be killed because of one man's action. And when I say that, I think in terms of sometimes the terrorists that commit horrible acts. And I've had thoughts like this. Well, if we know what country they're from, bomb the whole country into oblivion. Let God sort them out, as the old sticker on the motorcycles used to say. But you know, that's a horrible thing to say as a preacher. Because sometimes in those countries you got innocents. And you don't just go over there and just nuke them all. That ought to be the very, 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 very last response. But now those that commit the heinous acts, I'm for hunting them down. I'm for taking them out. But sometimes the old flesh will say, just kill them all, let God sort them out. But that's not the Christian attitude. Innocents are innocent. And so David is making a bad decision, maybe because of his temper. Let me share one word with you out of verse 14. David sent these messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, this servant tells Abigail. And it says that Nabal railed on him. He railed. You say, what does that mean? That basically means he went crazy on him. I mean, he's cursing at him. He's losing his temper. He's screaming at him. These men haven't done anything to him except ask in a very kind, gracious way, would you give us some food because of the protection that we've given you? The picture, according to one word study that I read, it's the idea of a ravenous bird that has spied maybe the dead carcass of an animal, and it just flies in very quickly, lands and begins to rip the flesh. That's the picture that you see with Nabal and the way that he's talking to these 10 boys. He's as though he's a vulture, as though he's a buzzard eating the carcass of a dead deer, just ripping it. And that's what he has done to these 10 boys. And David says, yeah, okay. What's happened is his mouse wrote a check that his blessed assurance can't cash. And so David, he's weaponized. And off they go, and they're headed to Nabal's house. And this servant, he's panicking. This servant maybe got to be friends with one of these, or maybe two of these boys that had been protecting him, because he had been out there with them, according to the passage. And so you've got David's men talking to this shepherd, and they're going, you know, I feel sorry for Nabal. When we tell David this, he's going to be mad. I don't know what King David's going to do. And they weren't calling him king at the time, unless the 600 were. But they knew he was going to be king. We don't know what he's going to do. But I guarantee you something's going to be done. And this young shepherd boy, he's like, my master, he's a fool. As a matter of fact, if you look at the latter part of verse 17, when he's talking to the man's wife. Now imagine talking to a man's wife. And you're just a servant. And you're telling her about her husband. All right? And it says, He's determined evil against our master and against all his household, for he, Nabal, is such a son of Belial. Belial? That's a pagan. That is a wicked one. I mean, this comes close to cursing. I mean, to call a husband of the wife you're talking to, he's a son of Belial, that nobody can speak to him. In other words, he is so much into his rage, he can't think. And he says, now therefore know this and consider what you're going to do. Next time, we're going to see the plan that she comes up with, and basically, she saves this fool's life. He's fixing to die. And he is so thick, he doesn't even know it. So next week, we'll pick up in verse 18 with Abigail making haste, and she has provisions. Let's stand together. Thank you so much for being here tonight.